The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Here we are on the last program of the week, this fast-moving week. And over the course of this past week, we've talked some about television's age of darkness, looking at the television industry and the entertainment industry and all of the dark and perverse themes being churned out on a daily basis. And we've also talked about the dangerous threat facing the West coming from radical Islam, coming from radical Islamist terrorists. And of these two, the moral degeneration in our society and religious fanaticism, what poses the greatest danger or threat to our society, to our culture? That the Spectator, Theo Hobson, posted this on his blog just yesterday. What a comparison he makes here. Last night, Channel 4 broadcast a program by Trevor Phillips in which he worried about the integration of British Muslims. He suggested that we should switch to a policy of active integration. We told you about this program yesterday. We played some excerpts. This broadcast on Channel 4, Trevor Phillips. Now that we need to implement a policy of active integration to get Muslims integrated into British society, British culture. This was a program that sounded the alarm on Wednesday night. The night before, Hobson writes, at the same time of 10 p.m., so it was in the same time slot, Channel 4, on Tuesday night, the station broadcast a program in which the merits of having sex with a complete stranger were discussed. Some people find it very liberating, he says, saying, or rather quoting from a sexpert, as she's called. And then the audience giggled and laughed along. Hobson says, I consider the makers of that program a greater threat to British culture than any peddler of Islamist propaganda. If I were somewhat detached from mainstream British culture and saw that show, I would assume that it was more representative of British culture than it is, and would feel the need to build high walls to protect me from it. Perhaps Trevor Phillips feels that British Muslims should be encouraged to watch Channel 4, but maybe they already do, and that's the problem. Maybe they already are watching this show, Sex Box, it's called. And maybe that's part of the reason they don't want to integrate. So which is the greater danger here? And if you look at all the comments underneath that little blog posting by Theo Hobson, the overwhelming number just ridiculed him. They ridiculed him as being reactionary or a prude. Channel 4 is not out there bombing anyone. Channel 4 is not beheading anyone. But step back. Look at the big picture here. And what is it over the past couple generations that's inflicted more harm on British culture? I mean, that was really the underlying message of Trevor Phillips' special on Wednesday night look, we've got a British culture to uphold here. And so when people come in from abroad, they have to assimilate. Well, let's look at British culture. Let's look at what we're asking them to assimilate into. I thought I'd read some excerpts here. Again, it helps for us to step back to see the bigger picture. These are excerpts from this book, Coming Apart. It's a 2013 bestseller by Charles Murray, an American author. And in his prologue at the start of the book, he talks about the assassination of JFK, which happened back in 1963, and how that was a real turning point for the United States in a number of different ways. And in this prologue, he talks a little bit about the culture in America before the assassination. Not that it just changed overnight, the moment JFK died. But it is a revealing snapshot of life in America, to use the American example, in the 1960s, the early 1960s. It's a revealing snapshot of American culture, a time when the most popular TV shows were My Three Sons, Perry Mason, the Beverly Hillbillies, the Flintstones. There was the Dr. Phil equivalent back then. I'm not familiar with this show, Dr. Kildare. In any event, on his show, there was a pregnant, unmarried teenager who had gotten an abortion. And the approach or the angle that show took on what this young gal had done was very much in keeping with the American way of life at that time. Murray says here, she shouldn't have gotten pregnant in the first place, of course. Getting pregnant without being married was wrong. And if a girl did get pregnant, then she and the boyfriend who had gotten her in that fix were supposed to get married. If she didn't get married, she should put the baby up for adoption. These were conventional views shared across the political spectrum. As of 1963, Americans continued to obey those norms with remarkable consistency. Marriage was nearly universal, Murray writes, and divorce was rare across all races. Divorce was a rarity. Marriage was nearly universal. It says not only were Americans almost always married, mothers normally stayed at home to raise their children. More than 80% of married women with young children were not working outside the home in 1963. He says when Americans watched the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, they were looking at a family structure that the vast majority of them recognized from their own experience. Whether they were white or black, or whether they were working class, middle class, or rich, it didn't matter where they came from, how rich they were, how poor they were, what race they were. This was a way of life that they were familiar with, that they identified with. Further on, he says, whether television was portraying loving traditional families or pointing with alarm to the perils of breaking the code, television was a team player. It was taken for granted that television programs were supposed to validate the standards that were commonly accepted as part of, quote, the American way of life, a phrase that was still in common use in 1963. That's what entertainment was there to promote in the early 1960s. Murray says the film industry chafed under the obligation more than the television networks did, but it mostly went along. Few relics of a half century ago seem more antiquated than the constraints under which filmmakers operated. If filmmakers in 1963 wanted the approval of the Production Code of the Motion Picture Association of America, which almost all of them still did, the dialogue could not include any profanity stronger than, well, the H word and the D word. And there had better be good dramatic justification even for them. Characters couldn't take the name of the Lord in vain, or ridicule religion, or use any form of obscenity, meaning just about anything related to the sex act. Actors couldn't be seen naked or even near naked, nor could they dance in a way that bore any resemblance to a sexual action. The plot couldn't present sex outside marriage as attractive or justified. Homosexuality was to be presented as a perversion. Abortion? The subject of abortion shall be discouraged, shall never be more than suggested, and when referred to, it shall be condemned. That last bit there is a direct quote from what? From the Production Code of the Motion Picture Association of America. If you want to make a motion picture, a film, if you want to talk about abortion, then you better discourage that. You better say that that act is condemned. That's a little snapshot of American culture in 1963, a little over a half century ago, 50 years. And how far we've come since that time. Is it progress? Is it progress? Now you turn on the TV, switching back here to the UK, you turn on Channel 4, just the night before, a relatively good program, talking about the danger of Islamic extremism. 24 hours earlier, there's Sexbox. Hobson wrote in a different piece about the same show. He said, some people seem to want to discuss their sex lives on television, as in the new show Sexbox. Couples are interviewed before and after they've tried something new right there in the studio, although hidden from view. This week, the couple were close friends and were trying out being lovers for the first time. He explains there's all kinds of therapy offered from the sexpert, of course, plus all kinds of saucy joking, innuendo, a graphic discussion about all things sex. It's right there on Freeview. Anyone can get it that has a television. And Hobson says here, I consider this sort of thing a form of cultural vandalism, rather like what ISIS got up to in Palmyra. Something frail and important is being damaged in a quick burst of self-righteousness. What is being damaged is the delicate tradition that associates sex with profound privacy. Well, it's much more than that. Much, much more. But you have to at least tip your hat to Mr. Hobson for bringing it up and facing the amount of ridicule that he's now facing in the comment section, even at The Spectator, a more conservative publication. He says here, a boring free market sort will here pipe up. Well, you're still free to be private, even if they choose not to be. Well, you can turn it off, and that's true, he says. Yes and no. The tradition that associates sex with profound privacy is a cultural thing, and such programs have the power to change culture a notch or two. This sort of program has a little bit of power to say this exhibitionism is now culturally normal. Objecting to it is abnormal and reactionary. Yes, and look at the comments underneath his posting. And that's exactly the way the majority feels. Who are you to criticize a show like this? I mean, it's freedom. It's freedom. It's just entertainment. They're not going around chopping off heads. Come on. Loosen up a little bit. And if you don't like it, turn it off. What's the big deal? But there's great power in this medium, as Herbert Armstrong said in that clip I played for you on Monday. And if you want some proof of this power, if you want proof of the power of a program to change culture, well, look at culture today when compared to 1963, two generations ago, 53 years, Ozzie and Harriet, and then now this, Mr. Armstrong in The Missing Dimension in Sex, he said, since it's a basic truism that a solid family structure is the foundational bulwark of any stable and permanent society, this fact means only one thing. Civilization as we know it is on the way down and out. Unless that great unseen strong hand from someplace soon intervenes and saves today's sick society. Civilization's on the way down and out. Because the foundation underpinning our society, the foundation underpinning British culture and American culture, it's totally broken in the new morality book. This is the earlier version of The Missing Dimension in Sex. Mr. Armstrong said that this downward plunge, morally, that it's becoming a greater threat to humanity than the hydrogen bomb. Was he exaggerating? He was right at the forefront, by the way, talking about the tremendous changes taking place culturally, sexually, there in the early 1960s. The pendulum swing from the old morality over to the new. He wrote about it in God Speaks Out on the New Morality. That was the 1960s version of The Missing Dimension in Sex. By the early 70s, he had changed the title, but a lot of it's the same content. And Mr. Armstrong was there saying, is this a good thing? These changes, lowering the standards, abandoning our culture. Well, there were problems with the old morality too, and he brings that out in The Missing Dimension in Sex. But he said, to swing from one extreme to the other, it's like going from the frying pan into the fire. And who can deny that when looking at the state of the family in Britain or in the United States? Yes, it is a greater threat, a greater danger, a much greater danger. You may not have an actual knife wielded by an Islamic extremist as he's about to cut the head off of a Westerner, an infidel. But how can you even total it up? The amount of death, the amount of destruction, the amount of suffering, the amount of sorrow and anguish, the frustration, the hatred that this pendulum swing over to the new morality, how much has it caused? How much death and destruction? How much suffering and anguish? With the disintegration of the traditional family, the bedrock underneath a strong, stable society. You undermine that, you tear that apart. And the destruction and the death and the suffering is widespread. It's universal. My father gave a program back in May of 2011, almost 5 years ago now. This was soon after the death of Osama bin Laden. And he talked about his death and that attack on the United States back on 9/11, 2001. And he talked about the state of American culture as well in that same program. This is a clip from that Key of David program, May 15th, 2011.
The United States spreads its pornographic movies and obscene music around the earth through the internet. America and Britain have the best technology in the world. And also they both have the most pornography, and especially America. But I wrote, we are better equipped than any nation has ever been to deliver a message. But our message to the world is dominated by the worst pornographic filth humanity has ever seen. It is America's number one worldwide business. Depraved music is our number two export. The world is full of violence and ready to explode into nuclear warfare, and America's strongest messages to the world is the filthiest Satan-inspired trash ever seen and heard. Now, those are strong words, but let me just think about this for a moment. Please think about it and get the picture here. We're facing as our number one problem human survival. Human survival. And here we have the greatest technology in all of the world, and America's number one message or export is pornographic material. That's our number one message to the world.
That was from 2011, back in May. All of this technology in America and Britain, as he said. He was quoting, by the way, from, I believe it was The Last Hour book, his book. And as he said there, they're strong words in that book, but look at where we are. Look at the threats, the dangers that we're facing. And even as we have all of this technology, this ability to send such a powerful message to the world, what is it instead that we're sending out? And with pride. What a revealing comparison. Wednesday night, 10 p.m., Channel 4. What British Muslims really think. Tuesday night, 10 p.m., Channel 4, Sex Box. It'd be interesting to compare the audience size for each of those programs. I don't know if there's a way to do that. Perhaps I can get someone in the office here to look into that. Maybe that would reveal more. Who knows? The show of their countenance does witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. We declare it. There's no shame. This is something we're proud of. We're proud of it. It's free speech. Well, it was the same nation in 1963, or at least the same constitution in the United States, the same laws, the same freedoms. And yet, according to the production code of the Motion Picture Association of America, if you're going to make a film, these are the rules. If you're going to make a film, this is the message. that you can't say. Because there's a code here. There's an American way of life here. And if you want to destroy all of that in the name of freedom, then you keep in mind, they could have said, you keep in mind what the founders had to say about how the only way this experiment will work, the only way that this government can work, is if we are a religious and moral people. You take that away and society has nothing left to stand on. Notice what else my father had to say in that program from 2011.
Let me read you a few quotes from Osama bin Laden's letter to the American people. Now, that was the way it was addressed. His letter to you, November 2002, and he was sort of boasting about his attack on America and letting us know why he was attacking us. And here are some of the reasons, some of the main reasons. He said, you stop your oppression, lies, immorality, and debauchery that has spread among you. We call you to be people of manners, principles, honor, and purity, to reject the immoral acts of fornication, intoxicants, gamblings. It is saddening to tell you that you are the worst civilization witnessed by the history of mankind. Well now, could that be true morally and spiritually? He says, and this has motivated him to do what he did on 9/11. He said, it is saddening to tell you that you are the worst civilization witnessed by the history of mankind. And I tell you, as far as morals is concerned, I have to say, well, isn't that correct? He said, you are a nation that permits drugs and only forbid the trade of them, even though your nation is the largest consumer of them. Is that true? Or is America the largest consumer of drugs? It is. I mean, we consume more illicit drugs than anybody on earth, and it's so bad, our addiction is so bad, that down in Mexico, I mean, we've thrown that nation into bloody chaos in many ways because of our desire for drugs. Why do we need drugs? What is wrong with our people that we need drugs? What's wrong with our young people? Are we a hypocritical nation? Well, Osama bin Laden certainly thought so.
Well, that's coming from, Osama bin Laden's thoughts. That's coming from a deranged and perverted hypocrite himself. But again, coming back to God's assessment of our nations and where we are morally and the death and destruction that it's brought upon us. I should have brought that section from Coming Apart. Mr. Murray also has a fair bit in there about drugs in the early 1960s and just how rare it was and how our prison population was just hardly anything compared to today. And so many people today are in prison because of drugs and drug trafficking. Hundreds of thousands. Not much of a problem in 1963. Now there's this addiction to illicit drugs, to illicit sex, to watching and even participating in gruesome acts of violence. You read about them in the papers and you think, how could the human mind even think to do something like that? As our swing to the new morality, This culture sinking into a cesspool of bizarre and deranged and illicit behavior? Has it caused any death and destruction? Has it caused any suffering? In truth, it's caused a lot more death, destruction, and misery than even the worst of those radical Islamic Islamist terrorists, even the worst of them. One final quote here from my father. This is audio clip number 4.
Well, if you see, if you have all of this sex thrown at you, illicit sex, and all the time you see it everywhere you look, on TV, movies, where don't you see it? But it leads people to be without natural affection, and their whole lives are built around lust. And we lose our natural affection, just the natural affection that God built into us that we ought to have. We don't have natural affection, and oh, what an impact that has on our families, and what an impact drugs have on our minds, and it wrecks our minds. What is wrong with people that want to live that way of life? Something is lacking in their lives, and it's not a need for drugs. It's a need for spiritual food. That's what's lacking, and that's what would fill the void in their life, and the only thing that will ever fill that void. It's the only thing.
But it's not satisfied by God's Spirit or the Holy Bible, the truth of God. And that's why you see in our nation so much emptiness, so much addiction, so much unhappiness and misery, and people by the millions trying to fill the void with every form of illicit activity imaginable, particularly as we covered this week with respect to the entertainment industry. As he said there in 2011, I mean, where don't you see it? And yet still, people in our own society will rush to its defense and say, look, how can you say this is making society any worse? Come on, don't be a reactionary. Don't be so abnormal. This is normal. This is 2016. Nobody wants to go back to 1963. Nobody wants to revert back to the way it was when the code, the motion picture code coming out of Hollywood was that, hey, if you're going to bring up the subject of abortion, you make sure you condemn that. Who wants to go back to those rules? It's so much better today, is it not? When you can abort babies by the millions? You talk about death and destruction. In terms of numbers, the numbers of people that have suffered, that have died, that have led miserable lives, one addiction after another. Well, what we're seeing in this other threat, and it is a threat. It's a dangerous threat, particularly if one gets a dirty bomb. But it's just a drop in the bucket, comparatively. Mr. Armstrong was right. He was absolutely right. This downward plunge, morally, it's rapidly becoming a greater threat to humanity than the hydrogen bomb. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream's available at the trumpet.com website and the kpcg.fm website as well. Was hoping to get to a few emails. I might just run out of time today, but don't let that discourage you from sending in your comments. You can send those to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. untold thousands of professing Christian ministers have, over the centuries, preached Christ. They have professed to be his ministers, to represent him. They have said Jesus of Nazareth is the Christ, but they have withheld Christ's gospel. Thus, the vast majority of people on earth have been deceived by false gospels. The incredible human potential reveals how men were deceived about the truth of the gospel, and it makes plain what the good news of the true gospel really is. The true gospel of God's coming kingdom is directly concerned with world conditions as they are, with human nature, its source and origin, with world evils, suffering, unhappiness, with world peace. It's concerned with government, with the reason present human governments fail to be the benefactors of their peoples they are supposed to be. This all-important subject is thoroughly explained in Herbert Armstrong's book, The Incredible Human Potential. Request The Incredible Human Potential today. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
And this is the way we're spending our money in this end time, when we ought to be sending out a message to the entire earth. Much different than that. We ought to be embarrassed by what we are doing, frankly, but I don't believe many people are.
That's also from that program in 2011, Osama bin Laden and the 9/11 attack. We ought to be embarrassed by what we're doing, but how many people actually are? How many more people would rush to the defense of Sexbox than the traditional family, or someone that's speaking in support of the traditional family? The family, the way that God organized it. We ought to be, as he said there, we ought to be embarrassed by what we're doing, by what we're producing, by what we're viewing, by the things that we're talking about, by the things that we're addicted to, by the lives that we're destroying. I want to take you through a few verses here in Genesis 18 and verse 19. This is history. And as I covered earlier this week, it's history that Isaiah tried to remind us about, that Jesus reminded us about, that the Apostle Peter reminded us about, that the Apostle Jude reminded us about. It's discussed, in other words, from beginning to end in the Bible. You read about it here first in Genesis 18 and verse 1, and the Eternal appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre. And he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. So God appeared to Abraham here in Genesis 18. And verse 2 says he lift up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed down himself, or bowed himself toward the ground. So this is Abraham, and the one who became Jesus Christ later, accompanied by two angels, these three men, as they're called there in verse 2. But drop down to verse 16 if you're reading along. This is Genesis 18 and verse 16. And it says here, and the men rose up from thence and looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. And the Eternal said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? I mean, should I hide this from him? What it is that I'm going to do? And he says further about Abraham, verse 19, for I know him. I know him, Abraham, that is, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. And so here is this great family man, this patriarch, who would teach and train his children, his household, according to God's ways. And that's really what God was so excited about here. He was so excited about the potential of this remarkable family and the foundation that this would establish underneath all Israelite society. Now, what a stark contrast, again, just in looking at comparisons here. The contrast between this family of Abraham and the society that's discussed in the very next verse. Verse 20, and the Lord said, behold, or rather, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is come unto me, and if not, I will know. I have an article here called Sodom, the Untold Story. It's from the Plain Truth Magazine, March 1980. And it says here, the result of the Sodomites' way of life plunged the people into increasingly distorted, debased human character. God saw their character. He saw their progeny becoming completely perverted. He had to intervene. If they had gone on, it would have been improbable they could ever achieve God's great purpose for them in a future resurrection. So God, in his mercy, intervened with a catastrophic punishment and cut off their lives. God was thinking long term. He was thinking, I'm going to work with these people in the great white throne judgment when they come up in the second resurrection. And I don't want their minds and their lives so deranged, so perverse, that it's like a permanent scar. I want to be able to work with them and teach them my ways and build families, strong families, like Abraham's family. Well, they were crying out, this society, not for God's help. It talks about the cry of it there in verse 21. That's really talking about their open acceptance of every imaginable sin. Total freedom. Absolute freedom. Free speech, free entertainment, free whatever. No restrictions, no rules, no codes. Just open acceptance of every abominable form or behavior. It's very similar to what it says in Ezekiel 16. Well, he's another one. You can add him to the list. Isaiah, Jesus, Jude, Peter, Ezekiel in chapter 16. Talking about the sins of Sodom, the pride, the fullness of bread, all the abundance, in other words, the abundance of idleness, the haughty spirit. Staying here in Genesis 18, it says in verse 22, and the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Eternal, and Abraham drew near and said, will you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Will you also destroy and not spare the place of the 50 righteous that are therein? And verse 26 says, "And the Eternal said, If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes." Well, you can read through to the end of the chapter where God said he'd spare Sodom if there were just 10 righteous individuals, 10 righteous men. What does that tell you? About how corrupt, about how violent, how immoral that society had become. Sin was universal. Sin was rampant. And there was only just the one righteous man in the city. Chapter 19, verse 1, "And there came two angels to Sodom at even. And Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground, and he said, Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and you shall rise up early, and go on your ways. And they said, No, but we will abide in the street all night. And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house, and he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. He pressed them greatly to stay in his house, because he knew how dangerous it would be for these two to spend the night out on the street." These two strangers, actually angels, who came to Sodom, Lot took them in. And verse 4 says, "But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house around, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto Lot and said unto him, Where are the men which came in to you this night? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them." Bring them out, as it says in Moffat, so that we might rape them. That's what was happening in this society. That's the sort of behavior. Absolute freedom to do whatever, with whomever, didn't matter. And as I say, this is an event that's referred to repeatedly in the Bible. The book of Jude, verse 7, "Even as Sodom and Gomorrah, and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication, going after strange flesh, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire." I mean, this is not me. This is the Bible. This is God's word saying, look, remember this example. Remember what happened here. Make sure you heed the warning. Make sure you learn the lesson. Back to that article, Sodom, the Untold Story, this plain truth piece from 1980, it says in the New Testament, Jude 7 clearly reveals that the Sodomites were giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh. The original Greek word here translated fornication is ekporneo. It means to be utterly sexually unchaste. It includes all kinds of sexual immorality or unlawful lust. The Revised Standard Version translates this verse, "Sodom and Gomorrah and the surrounding cities, which likewise acted immorally and indulged in unnatural lust." And so this plain truth piece says it was full spectrum, a full spectrum of sexual immorality, incest, adultery, wife swapping, premarital sex, bisexuality, homosexuality, sadomasochism, bestiality, and every other kinky sex act the human mind has conjured up. In other words, Sodom and Gomorrah had pulled off the final coup of their sexual revolution. To use the terminology of today, there was absolutely no discrimination based on effectual or sexual preferences or sexual orientation. No discrimination. No rules, no code, no nothing. In fact, now we just pull two complete strangers off the street and have them perform a sex act right in the studio audience, right in the midst of the audience, right in this little box. And we can talk about it, and we can keep all the cameras rolling. We can bring on the therapist. And the society can just get so much better because of it. That's what men say. But look at our world. Look at the world of entertainment. Shall we talk about British culture? What's there? Truly, truly, what's there that's left to defend? What's there worth defending? Is this something we want to hold up and say to those who visit us, to those trying to get into Britain or those trying to get into America? Here's our culture. Here's what we're proud of. Here's what you need to be watching. This will make you a good British citizen. I think there's some towering figures of Britain's own history that would be appalled by that today. If they came to our time from 1963 or 1903 or 1853, But what does God say? That's the important thing to consider. What did Jesus Christ warn? It's right there in the Gospels. It's right there in prophecy. Prophecy. That's why Jude brings it up. That's why Peter brought it up. Herbert Armstrong wrote in Mystery of the Ages, "I think one of the greatest tests that everyone whom God has called faces is giving up this world and being part of it. It is so difficult to give up this world, to give up the ways of this world, and we don't realize how bad it's gotten. Because, well, we're of this world. We've lived in this world, some of us, since before 1963. And it just gets worse and worse and worse, like 2 Timothy 3:13 says it will. But we get numb to it. We're desensitized. And we think that, well, it's just television. I guess if it gets really bad, we can always switch it off. But what is it doing to society as a whole? Jesus described our latter-day society as being just like Sodom and just like Gomorrah. He said it would get that sick right here in the last days. Luke 17:29 says, "But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed." So there is hope. Jesus Christ is going to return to this earth, and he's bringing with him a code, a set of rules for conduct, laws. Holy laws that will protect the family, that will build society, and most important, a government to administer those perfect and righteous laws. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on yet another week of broadcasting. From KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, and the live stream at the Trumpet website and kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us this week. And we'll see you again next week.